Position number 21627, rail 1.
Jack Pensolo, rail 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Rail 1s, Northamptonshire.
Which year was this?
1924.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Rons?
Yes.
Which school did you go to?
What was then called the council, Rons Council School.
And how old were you when you finished there?
14.
In 38?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I was an apprentice as a joiner.
Whereabouts?
In Rushden. So I used to cycle to Rushden every day and back. Signed an apprenticeship for 5 years, but of course with the advent of the war, I didn't complete that because I was in the army in 1942.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did.
Under what circumstances?
Just sitting by the radio on a Sunday morning, interested to find out what was happening.
How did you feel about it?
Well, perturbed, obviously, but as a 14-year-old lad, not too concerned, I suppose.
Did the war affect you at first?
Not really. Out in the rural sticks.
Was there any bombing in Rons?
Not in Rons itself. There were some odd bombs in the fields, but nothing. No attack on Rons at all. There was one on Rushden, which probably Joe Eakins is related to. I don't know.
What do you know about that?
Well, I was working on the circular, or assisting on the circular saw, and I saw this plane on the morning, and the things start dropping out of the sky, and it went right along the high street, caught a factory and a school. I forget how many children were killed and people killed, but that would be about 1941, I think. Quite a lot of damage, and as a joiner of the firm I was working for, we were called on to do the repairs and what have you.
So you went into Rushden?
Yeah, I was working in Rushden. That's where I served in my apprenticeship.
So did the bombs fall anywhere near you?
No, no.
What effect did it have on public morale in Rushden?
Well, of course, obviously caused a lot of concern, and I mean, I think most people thought that in a rural area like this there wouldn't be that sort of thing, but he was being chased by a plane and just dropped his bombs to get away.
Did you join Home Guard?
Not in the Home Guard, no. I was in the ARP, fire watching and what have you.
What did that involve?
Well, just being out when there was a raid on. Patrolling.
Were there many military or service personnel in your area?
In Rons, yes, quite a lot. Various Czechoslovakian regiment, Canadian regiment, Scottish regiment, the Inzer Court, that's all I can remember before I went into the army myself.
What effect did they have on the town?
Interested the girls.
Any misbehaviour?
Not really, no. One or two, couple of girls married Czechs. And one that I can remember married into court. And then, of course, the Americans, they descended around this area after I got, I was in the army. No, before. And they had the airdrome up the road, Joe Weston. Excuse me. And the firm I worked for as an apprentice also were undertakers, and they had a contract for military funerals and that sort of thing. Not funerals as much as coffins and getting the bodies off to wherever they were supposed to go. And I remember once in the Americans, a plane crashed in Earthenborough, and they were taken to the American base at Chalveston, and the Americans dealt with it. But after that, I was in the army. And
did the service personnel have any effect on local prosperity?
Well, with the Americans, I'm sure the pubs and certain people were lining their pockets a bit.
Can you tell me about going into the army, please?
Yes, I joined the army in October 1942 in Aberdeen, which took me 22 hours to get there from here. The Bridge of Don Barracks, the home of the Gordon Islanders at that time. Did a month up there, and then got posted to Catterick in the RAC, and trained as driver mechanic on the tanks. And at that time, Shermans were beginning to come into the country, and I had the opportunity of driving and using the first Shermans that came into the country. Eventually, after I completed my training, I got posted to the Northants Yeomanry.
Can you tell me any details about this training, please?
Well, learning to drive a tank and the mechanics of an engine and what have you. I didn't do any radio or gunnery as such. That was a sideline. I was concentrated on driving and the mechanics of a tank.
So what was the title of your job?
Driver mechanic.
What did you think of the quality of the training that you got?
Well, not having anything to compare it with, I was quite happy. I learned a lot, obviously. I'd never done anything with engines and mechanical stuff before, so.
What were the difficulties of doing that job?
No particular difficulties that I can remember. I was always very much a man who worked with his hands and being a joiner and this sort of thing, and I think that made it easy.
And driving a tank, was that
no
problematic?
No. I was able to drive before I went in the army.
So was it just like driving a car?
Well, not quite like driving a car, but the principle is the same, but you've got levers to operate rather than a steering wheel. But I found no problem with driving tanks.
What was discipline like during training?
Reasonably strict. And of course, being young and a bit naive, most people accepted what they were told to do, and a bit different to what it is these days.
Did you find the discipline acceptable?
Yes. Yes. It caused me no problems, and I never got into serious problems.
Did you ever resent it?
No. No. What's the point?
Where did you find the Northamptonshire Yeomanry? Was that a unit you'd requested?
No, but I was absolutely thrilled to be posted to the North Ants, being a Northamptonshire lad. And they were down at Codford on Salisbury Plain, and I was sent down there with quite a large draft, because the North Ants had been depleted prior to that with sending people to North Africa, and so the regiment was brought up to strength by this draft that I was on. And as I say, I was delighted to get into the Northants Yeomanry, being a Northampton lad. And I was posted to A Squadron and to one Troop A squadron, and I was delighted when I met the troop sergeant, who was about 4 years older than I, but he'd been at the same school, and I'd admired him as a lad because he used to walk about 3.5 miles to school across the fields. Why he came to this school here, I don't know, but he lived in a village in what was then Huntingdonshire, and he used to walk on his own across these fields and roads to school. And as I say, I used to admire him for his bravery, if you like. I wouldn't have wanted to have done it, not then. And as I say, he was about 3 or 4 years older than me, but to be in his troop was a bonus.
What was his name?
Sergeant Ryan. And as I say, I admired him as a lad at school, but I got to admire his bravery, and he was a tremendous athlete and a great man. A giant of a man with a heart of gold. And I remember in Normandy, there was a lot of skirmishes, as you know, after the landing, where things happened to keep the Germans on the toes, little raids here and raids there. And we were sent on a reconnaissance to see if there was anybody in the farmhouses, which you could see. I mean, it was fairly obvious that there was somebody going to be in there, the Germans. And one troop was sent in with 4 Shermans and a troop of reconnaissance infantry. And we went forward and picked our way through the dead cattle that were laying there, and rather than run over them. And there was a farmhouse, one of the farmhouses, and the officer of the reconnaissance regiment got up to this farmhouse, and there was a hole in the wall, and sitting very inside behind a machine gun, a Spando, was a couple of Germans, and because he was up against the wall and he couldn't move, he could only go one way, and he pointed to us, to the tanks, that there was somebody there, and we teed, or guns were teed up to fire into this hole, and once we fired, he made a dash for it, coming towards the tanks, but not in the line of fire. But unfortunately for him, there was a machine gun in the farmyard up the side, and that opened up as he ran across. Nothing had happened until he got up there in the by the farmhouse. They just sat waiting for us. They'd got all the advantages. They'd got all the cards in their own hand, and all hell was let loose with the mortars and machine guns. And this poor chappy, the officer, ran towards the tanks, and he was fired on by the other machine gun and caught round here,
and
he dropped to the ground, and we moved the tanks, one across the hole and the other one across the machine gun in the farmyard, with the officer laying on the ground. He was protected by the tanks, and hell was all let loose with these mortars and crashing down. Sergeant Ryan gets out the tank and to this officer, and he says, "I'll never get out of here, just tie me hands to the shackle at the back of the tank and drag me out." With that, he was known affectionately as Buck Ryan. He picked him up like a baby and laid him on the back of the tank and clambered up and beside him and held him. As he got out the tank, one of the other reconnaissance chappies got in the tank. That was the only time that I ever saw an infantryman get in the tank, because they would keep away from them, because tanks attracted shell fire, and that's what they didn't want. But this chappie got in there, he's absolutely terrified. And Sergeant Ryan sat on the back of this tank, holding this chappie under all this barrage of mortars, and got him out. And, you know, I was sorry that he never got him. I tell you whether he was mentioned or not, but because a bit later, the troop officer was killed, and so was Sergeant Ryan on the same day. But that's another story. But he was a great man.
Where did that take place?
I can't remember this was in Normandy. I can't remember the village, but it was just after the landings, before the breakout with Totalize.
Can we go back in the story to your joining the Northamptonshire Yeomanry,
yes,
please? And can you pick up the story from there?
Yes, when I joined them, they had a few Bren gun carriers, a few Covenanter tanks, and a few Crusader tanks. And it was quite a mishmash. It wasn't a tank regiment, really, but then there was we got rid of all these vehicles, and we sent down to Gloucester, of all places, for a month, I think. And during that period, half the regiment went down to Weston-super-Mare for a fortnight, with playing with mines and what have you on the beach under canvas. And then we returned, and the other half of the regiment went down and did the same exercise. And then we got moved from there up to Bury St Edmunds, or Codford, just outside Bury St Edmunds, and took was equipped with the Shermans.
Which, Codford?
Yes.
Or Colford?
Cod. And equipped with Shermans, which, as I say, I'd trained on, and we did our training on Thetford Heath and got quite conversant with the training and the tactics and what have you. And then we went down to Aldershot, ready for D-Day, and or the invasion, not D-Day, and waterproofed the tanks and got everything ready. And then, once we were prepared, went down to Gosport to go to Normandy.
How well prepared did you feel for Normandy by the end of all this training?
Well, it was one of these things, as I say, you had nothing to compare it, no standard to compare it with, which made you accept what had been prepared. It seemed that people knew what they were doing, and but it's different. An atmosphere is a bit different when you're on schemes on Salisbury Plain or Thetford Heath, what it is, and the real thing. It comes as a shock when the real thing, when you get involved in the real thing. But we went down to Gosport, boarded tank landing craft, and thought we were going straight over. Instead of that, we sat in the Solent overnight on the TLC that was leaking, had a hole in it. It'd been over before and got a hole in the bottom or something. And by morning, there was quite about 4 inches of water on the tank deck. And anyhow, we set off in the morning, and the depth of water on the tank deck increased. We got so far across, and the captain, or whoever's in charge of this tank landing craft, said things are getting serious. We either need to drive a tank off into the channel to keep the ship afloat, or if nobody's prepared to do that, everybody must bail with everything they can find, anything they can find. And the waves were lapping up just over the side. We were very low in the water. Anyhow, nobody volunteered to drive a tank off the landing craft halfway across the channel. And so everybody bailed, and we made it. They got rid of us quite a way out. The crew member dropped the ramp and stuck his pole in and said, "Oh, it's only about 5 feet or something, or 4 feet, but I think it was a bit deeper than that." We dropped off the end, and obviously the turret was above the top of the turret was above the depth of water, but it was a long time before I saw anything through the periscope that was above the waterline.
How nervous did you feel about that?
Well, it was a bit made one feel a bit apprehensive, because if it did come over the top, as in the driving compartment, and that, you hadn't got much chance of getting out. But anyhow, we landed okay and went to somewhere near Bayeux in a field, I can't remember what. And then we had one or two skirmishes, various little attacks. Then the Battle of Caen, we sat on top of the hill and saw the planes dropping the bombs, and then a disconcerting thing happened. A honey reconnaissance tank from the regiment was sent down. There was a lane down the side where we were, and suddenly he comes tearing back up this lane, being chased by a Mark IV German tank. And the can't remember now whether there's one, two, three squadrons of the regiment sat on top of this hill, and everybody traversed the guns towards this. It must have been a message saying that he was being chased by this Mark IV, but everybody traversed the guns towards this Mark IV and let fly at it, and the turret flew off and all sorts of things, and that did make us think, is the tank the ideal place to be? But
where did this take place?
Just on the outside Caen. We were sitting on top of the hill looking down on Caen to go into Caen, but of course it was there was so much devastation that you couldn't get through Caen. So we were withdrawn, and that had various skirmishes. And
any of those skirmishes you can describe in detail, please?
Not really. The main one that sticks in my mind is what I related about Sergeant Ryan and this going to this farmhouse. And I do remember one day, I can't remember where it was in Normandy, but a chappie in Sergeant Ryan's tank saying, "I hope we can hit a mine this today." And you know, so we get out of this bit, this sort of thing, and they did hit a mine, but nobody was injured, just broke the track and put them out for a while. And then we got, after this incident where Sergeant Ryan showed that tremendous bravery, I thought, we got stuck between some segmented railway lines. As a not a decoy, but an attraction for the Germans to have a go. They'd defeated a couple of tank regiments, and we couldn't make any progress, or the other regiments couldn't. And we were sat on this slope as an invitation for the Germans to come, but they didn't come. But the place was riddled with mosquitoes. Everybody was bitten with mosquitoes. It didn't matter what you put on it, you got bitten. And every vehicle that moved that created a bit of dust, it brought down a barrage of 88s. I remember one day we got some meat, fresh meat, and this chappie was walking across the field with his mess tin in his hand and this fresh cooked meat, and a barrage started, and he put it, laid it on the ground and dived under a tank. And the Shermans had two oil filters, engine oil filters on the back of the tank, out on the outside, and he stuck his mess tray underneath one of these, and the shells or shrapnel hit the oil filter, and all the oil ran out into this mess tin with his fresh meat, which was quite a disappointment. And yeah, we eventually moved from there, and I think it was then that we were prepared for the totalised scheme, which the regiment always called the Night March. And we practiced round Colombelles for that, and then set off on the night of the 7th of August, I think, four tanks wide in a column of, goodness knows how many vehicles, but the whole regiment plus some turretless tanks that the infantry were carried in. We had a navigating tank which was led by who is now Lord Boardman, and secondary navigating tank followed on, and then one troop with the first fighting tanks, followed by four flails, followed by the rest of the regiment. And as the it was dark when we set off, and as we progressed about 4 miles, the target was 4 miles into the enemy lines, and there was Normandy was renowned for sunken roads and large hedges on top of these banks. Anyhow, the route, one of these narrow lanes crossed it, and the first navigating tanks and one troop crossed this thing, all right. When the flails came along, they dug their arms into the banks a bit and were delayed, and other tanks had to get round them. The yeomanry were the on the left-hand side of this attack. There was four regiments, two English and two Canadian, and they extended to the right. The Northampton on the extreme left, the open flank, which was protected by RAF bombing on that side, which was quite close. You didn't screw the flap down, or I didn't, just left it loose, so that, and then the bombing on that side, the flap was judging about, but it needed to be like that just in case you needed to get out quick. And unfortunately, before we reached the target, Sergeant Ryan's tank, which was on the left, was bazookaed and knocked out, and they got out, and he was looking after his crew. A couple of them got broken legs, I think, and remember, it was dark, be something like 1 o'clock in the morning, and we're behind the lines, and he was looking after his crew, protecting them, and he was and machine gun opened up and caught him. They did get him back to a field hospital, but he died in the hospital. He may have died before we got there, I don't know. But we continued, and we reached the target, which was a thick hedge by the village of St Agnan. Lieutenant Coakley was the troop officer leader. Very nice chap. And the colonel came up, and he said, he said to Lieutenant Coakley, walk through this hedge. And the hedge was as thick as this garden is long. It was more like a spinney, I suppose. And tanks had crashed through it and created a path through it. And the colonel asked him to go forward and see what was the other side, if he could discern anything. And Lieutenant Coakley said to me, come with me and we'll go and see what's happened. Get somebody's Sten gun, because we were both had pistols, which was not really good protection walking through there. So I borrowed a Sten gun from the gunner, and we went off, walked through this hedge, and looked around the other side. He couldn't see anything. I mean, the Germans that were there were down in the slit trenches, probably more frightened than what we were, I don't know. But anyhow, we came back, and he reported to the colonel that he couldn't see anything. He said to him, we'll take your three tanks through and place yourself around the other side and fire at anything that moves. And so we remounted and we went through, and then in a few minutes we got a message to say that another troop was coming through with the same instruction has fired anything that moves. And the next thing I knew was Lieutenant Coakley was down in the bottom of the turret. He'd been shot in the head. So at that time I was a Lance Corporal and was sort of senior on the tank, and I told the operator to pass a message back that we were coming out, not to fire, to get him out. We came out and